Hi, my name is Max. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Max.
So, first want to talk a little bit about when I came in to AR. I was over at Cross Park, and I was in the detox there, and there's this big, giant room in there, and they took me from detox to this giant room with hundreds of people in there, and they had seats, you know, reserved for us. And I thought that was really special. And then I was really confused shortly after that. I thought that y'all, Alcoholics Anonymous, just like hearing yourselves talk, really. And I'm still not convinced otherwise, but sometimes. But I'm not. That's not me. I'm doing this because Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a better way to live. And in doing that, I'll do anything for it, really. So I'd first like to talk about, me as a kid. I was a country boy. I never knew it so much that I was country. Like, until you look back at a photo and, 10, 20 years later, and it's like, I've got a rat tail, you know what I mean? I got a mullet, you know, and we're all looking kind of like this, you know? So that's true about me. I mean, I did come from the country, and that's what kind of kid I was. I was constantly riding bikes, getting into trouble out in the woods, shooting anything I could. I lived a pretty good life in the country. There wasn't there wasn't anything too crazy going on out there. Talk a little bit about school. I failed kindergarten, so didn't get off to a good start on that on school. You know, that was kind of failed it. So I was dyslexic, and I didn't read well, and that started this whole different thing. I definitely fit in that category. I'm different. Kids made fun of me, you're different. So, that being said, there was definitely something more than just being dyslexic. It was, a bunch of fear. I was really afraid, when I was a kid, got in a lot of fights, that's just something that happened shortly after that. We moved around a lot. My mom was a teacher, and she was trying to get her teacher's degree, and I didn't know that she had something on her record, so it was kind of hard for her to get a teaching job. So we moved around a lot, due to that. There was always a lot of fighting over money in my home, physical fighting, like I said, too crazy. I always like to minimize stuff, y'all. It wasn't too bad, it's not too bad. Y'all can't identify with that, can you? There was a lot of fighting over money, and I knew that was something to fear, not having enough. So I also felt that. I've heard that in a lot of people's stories. So let's just say that. Love baseball. That is something that I truly loved. I really did. It was a way for me to get outside myself and be a part of a team, and I really fit in there, and I really exceeded there, and hated school. So that was kind of that. Moved to Alvarado, Texas in fifth grade, and definitely started getting in trouble there. Lots of fights, lots of, you know, just not doing what I was told. we'll talk about the first homeless person I saw. Again, I was in the country. We didn't see a whole lot of homeless people. And we were, for whatever reason, we were driving in a big town, and I saw someone that was homeless, and I asked my mom, what was that? You know, what's wrong there? Why can't we give them some money? Why can't we help them out? And she said that they are on drugs, and that won't help them, basically, is what she said. And I knew right then I didn't want to do drugs like that. I didn't want that. So that's the first experience I had with that. And, you know, it wasn't, you know, sixth grade, immediately I'm smoking pot, you know, like I didn't see that as a drug. I remember the smoke, and I had a whole lot of time, a good time smoking weed. I will like to say that was really fun. I remember the first time I smoked weed. We smoked it in a garage, and we made donuts. And how we made donuts is we got this dough, and we got a big frying pan, and we were gonna fry them up. We fried them up. And we had some donuts. Well, we were done with these said donuts, and it's time to get rid of this grease. And we put the grease in the water, and just grease went everywhere. And I didn't get touched. It was really weird. As in a lot of my drinking and using, I didn't get touched a lot. Not a lot of consequences for my actions. That was true for a long time, until it wasn't anymore. So I got kicked out of Rockport. Got kicked out of the town, and I'd gotten so much trouble. I was breaking in people's homes, lighting people's homes on fire accidentally, you know, not really trying to, but just getting high and messing up so bad that the sheriff told my dad that I need to be out of town by noon that day. And my dad was so bewildered that he said, can I have that in writing? And the sheriff said, sure. So we got it in writing, and it's kind of cool to look back on that. I'm officially kicked out of a town, and I've got to be out by noon. So that, yeah. So, you know, that's just the progression began there at sixth grade. I was constantly getting in trouble. That's the long and short of it. I mean, Williamson County, you know, going back there, getting busted for weed, doing a lot of probation, doing a lot of, you know, a lot of consequences. But my mom seemed to save me every time I get into something. My mom would bail me out for some way or another. And I always had that. I really leaned on that, and I didn't know that as much. So you know, it just continues, inspiring a riot in eighth grade, getting busted with pot again, continue, mom bails me out. Basically, it just, mom was it's time for you to get out of school. So she got me in an outside program where I didn't have to go to school anymore. And I went to work. I started plumbing, doing residential plumbing. And I remember I was 16 because they wouldn't let me hold the power tool. So, I started working and continued to get into trouble. Assault with the deadly weapon, more probation, never getting an actual, doing a lot of time, but started drinking and blacking out. I'm the kind of guy that drinks and blacks out and touches my best friend's girlfriend's butt. That's the kind of stuff I do. I don't know. I do. I wake up and like everybody's mad at me. I'm not a fun drunk. I'm not one of those drunks that you want around. Like, I'm angry and I do inappropriate shit. I mean, really, that's the kind of drunk I am. So much so that drinking was becoming a big gamble. It really was. Like, I didn't know what was going to happen, So I started doing a lot more drugs. I could, for some reason, manage that a lot better. I'd always, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't think I was that big of an alcoholic. I was more of a heroin addict, right? Well, now looking back in that and doing inventory, I realized that because alcohol was scary, like I never knew what was going to happen. So, a lot of speed and cocaine, basically. So much so, I remember, being on a 3 or 4 day bender and like just walking around a neighborhood. I don't know what I was doing. And like all these like nice houses, I was walking down the street and I just told myself, I was just real. Like, this is never going to happen for me. Like, I'm never going to get this. I'm never going to have, a nice house and a quiet neighborhood. And there was a part of me that wanted that. I just realized that was not the case, that where I was at, and I didn't think I could ever get there, really. And so, what do you do when you're, living unmanageable and, all this craziness? I get someone pregnant. That's what I do. We'll fix that. we'll get myself a wife and we'll settle down. And that didn't work for me. the night I signed the wedding papers, I'm partying with a stripper, and hanging out. That's just what's happened. I don't know what's gonna happen. I don't know, like, I'm going to go sign those papers and then I'm going to go hang out with her. Like, that is not true. I get this urge inside that doesn't accept no. I don't know if y'all know what that means. It says, hey, you're going out and you need to go have a good time tonight. You need to celebrate. You've put up with this chick long enough, that's what happens. That's like, I can always justify it. I can always justify like how I'm right and how I need a drink and how I need to go, do some drugs. I always told my wife that at the time, of course, because I'm not married to her anymore. I always told her, you know, while you're pregnant, I'm just going to get this out of my system. You know, I just need to get this out of my system. This is something that, you know, it's going to, as soon as she's born, like, I'm going to turn around, I'm going to turn over a new leaf, and I'm going to really, you know, buckle down and get things together. Well, that did not happen. That didn't. In 08, my mom died. The person who took care of me, who bonded me out of everything, she got cancer. I found out, you know, right around Christmas of 07. And, you know, she was dead really quick. And 08 is where, you know, I just gave myself an excuse to ride it out to the bitter end, you know, to really, like, just go off the deep end. I was feeling really lonely then. There was definitely this hole in me that I didn't understand. This big dark hole that it didn't matter how much drugs you put in, I wasn't okay. And you know, that was just the turning point. And the fact that, you know, I lost my job, you know, mom's gone. I pushed my wife at the time stayed with me all through all that. I finally pushed her away enough to where I told myself I was going to go out to Burnet, Texas and grow some weed and isolate real good and get my stuff together over there. That did not help in at all. What ended up happening is I met, you know, a lovely girl that liked to dance. Again, I was real fond of girls who like to dance. And, yeah, you know, I meet her and, you know, 2 weeks later I'm moving and I'm living in Austin. I've always done Vicodin at this point, but never anything like heroin. It was something about I told myself this lie. My aunt said that your mom was on heroin and that's why she's got hepatitis C. And I told myself, well, if she could do it, you know, and be all right and be an outstanding member of society, then so can I. And so that's how I justified doing heroin. And I'm the type of guy who brings that into everybody's life that I care about. You know, if I care about you, I've got to introduce this lovely new substance that will run your life into you. And I did that for a long time. I was supported by her. She paid the bills, and I got to do dope. You know, I got to do dope like I wanted to. The biggest thing, like I it was okay that I was a shithead. It was okay that I was doing all these messed up stuff. But what wasn't okay is I hadn't seen my daughter in about 3 years at that point. That was one thing that I really wasn't able to do enough drugs over. That really hurt. So that was in a general way what it was like. Kind of what ended everything is I got to be a big thief. I'd like to, and I'm not the kind of thief that likes to, you know, steal someone I don't know stuff. Like, I like to steal people that are close to me. I like to steal their stuff because it's easier. So I started doing that. Started stealing my wife at the time. She was still my wife. I started stealing her dad's guns, my father-in-law, and selling those along with anything really that I could find good over there. I mean, at first you could, the type of guy I was when I was growing up, you could trust me with anything, you know, but towards the end there, like, you couldn't trust me unless you were looking at me. You couldn't trust me. I mean, if you didn't actually see me not doing something, then yeah, it was really bad. They finally, you know, they finally found that one of their guns was at a pawn shop, you know, cause I can't sell it to anybody cool. You know, I've got to like go to the, you know, the place where you're going to get caught, the pawn shop and, you know, the traceable place. Cause I'm too lazy and I'm dope sick. So, spent some time in jail there. Didn't learn anything. I knew that I was going to get out and I was going to continue what I was doing, so much so I went ahead and took the felony. They were offering me probation. It was my first actual felony that I had been charged with. When I got out, I was right back at it. And what happened in 2012, I took some barbiturates, and barbiturates and opiates go really good together. I mean, really good together. So much so that I was living in a trailer on the east side, and I just picked a house. I was like, okay, that house right there, we're gonna go in it. And you know, we burglarized it, and but not like in a good way. Like, I went in there and like tried on their clothes, and you know, like ate their ice cream, and you know what I mean, like shit like that. I'm not a real criminal, like not a good one anyway. I'm a really bad one. And I'm like taking boots and shit, just like random shit. And we don't have a getaway car at that time. Of course not. We don't have a getaway car because, you know, we've got rid of that by now. So we're just walking down the street with all this stuff, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, and of course the neighbors see us, you know, they're like, what the hell are you doing? Oh, nothing. And so we walk to our little trailer, and of course the cops come, and at that time, that was my ninth felony that I had charged with. I don't know. I guess somewhere around 8 and 9 felonies, they don't care what kind of lawyer you have. It's like, dude, you need to do something. And what I decided to do on a last ditch effort was to go to rehab. And so I kept telling myself, there was a long time that I'm going to go to rehab. I'm going to beat this by going to rehab. I had never done that before. So I was like, I got him. I still got this one, you know, sleep. And my lawyer at the time, he's like, the best I can get you is 5 years prison. You know, that's all I can get you. And in my head, I'm like, no, I got him. I got him. And so anyway, I as I'm getting, you know, obviously my dad bonds me out. I'm out on bail. The person that was with was my girlfriend at the time. She was my co-defendant, and I don't know, a lot of y'all probably know that word, codependent. My codependent. She's also my girlfriend, okay? But, yeah, so she's my codependent. My codependent. That's awesome. I'm super codependent, too. But that's another meeting. So that didn't stop me. I mean, I still just had these delusions in my head that I was going to go to rehab, you know, shooting a needle every night in my arm. I'm going to wake up and I'm going to call somebody. I'm going to call the rehab and I'm going to get in. Well, that never happened, until I was picking up, my girlfriend at, the lovely Perfect 10. You know, I didn't have anything to do that night, so I was just kind of, you know, waiting around there. I didn't feel good enough to get inside. I wanted to get her money, like always. This is my MO. I'm waiting till she gets off so she can support our habit. And we don't have any gas in our vehicle at the time. And, this is just how it looked like. I mean, I don't have any cigarettes, so I'm like going to gas stations trying to find little butts in my car. So I knew I shouldn't have done that because we didn't have enough gas to actually, if you know where Perfect 10 is, it's not far from the gas station. It's real close. And I'd already done that to get a cigarette. Now, finally, I get her in the car. She's got a bunch of money. And, ready to go again, and I'm gonna go to the gas station, right? Well, I'm going to the gas station and we run out of gas, of course. The only thing I can do at this time is there's this ditch that's at like a 60 degree angle, like you can't pull off in the ditch, or you can pull in this driveway that happens to be a cop right there. You know, that's the only, I can either stop on the not the highway, but the frontage road, or I can pull in, and those are my only two options. So I'm like, I'm going to pull in behind this cop. Cops do not like when you pull in behind them. I'm going to tell you all that. They do not like that at all. Of course, there's everything in the car. I'm with my co-defendant. You know, she's in the car, you know, of course, like I'm driving and I don't have a license, of course, and I'm, you know, we switch and, you know, finally she's in the car, she's got a driver's license and I just know it's over. I just know, like, okay, this is the end. You know, I was really going to go to rehab. I was telling them I was really going to go to rehab. You know, I was really going to get myself clean. And, you know, there's every kind of felony in the car. There's everything, you know, to put me back in jail. I'm with her. So she comes up with this bright idea to tell the cops that she's her sister. The only problem is she doesn't know how to spell her sister's name. That's the only problem. She doesn't know how to spell the name. So they don't. They're really suspicious now. They're not taking us out of the car, which is really weird. She's in the back. She's like, hey, I'm Jennifer, but you know she's not spelling it right. And then they're coming up to me in the window and they're like, hey, you know. Who is this? And I tell her, it's Jennifer. And I don't know what happened, y'all. I can't explain it. I had a sunroof at the time. And I looked up and I said, God, you get me out of this one. I'm going to go to AR and I'm going to get my shit together. That really never has happened for me. I never really went to God to get out of that situation. And I don't know what it was. It wasn't 5 minutes after that, and they were driving us to go get gas. And we were on our merry little way. And I called AR, and I got an appointment. And they got funding because, you know, I can't pay for it, and nobody wants to pay for it at that time. I just make this pact with me and God, like, as soon as I can get in, I'm going to stop using. And, you know, I don't know, it was like I was being tested big time, because, I mean, we had more money at that time ever. So we were able to party like crazy. I thought it was never, I thought it was really weird. Because getting sick on heroin is not fun. That is not a fun thing. Anyway, we just, it comes time. Finally, it's my day to go to AR. And of course, I wake up like 4 hours late, you know, because I'm on bars and I don't know what time it is. And thank God AR still said, well, come on. You know, they said, get your butt up here. And I got there. And I got to detox, and I got to meet Danny. I wasn't the type of guy that would succeed in AA. I didn't think Danny. See, I was thinking Danny wasn't going to succeed either. He was with that guy with the guitar all the time. You know, I was like, no, you're definitely gone. But there was something about it. I needed that time, that 30 days, that 28 days that the state gave me, to dry out. I really did. I liked being sober. I liked not having to live that way. That became really comforting. I mean, really though, when I was in there, I wasn't sold on AA, because the people that were talking about it had been in like 5 or 6 times, and they knew all about this AA. And I was like, well, whatever that is, I'm not doing it, because these people have had to come back 5 or 6 times, and apparently this isn't working, y'all, okay? So I'm just going to do my own thing. I'm going to work out, you know, get a good job, meet the right girl, you know. That's what I need, you know, is that damn girl that was bringing me down. So what happened is I got out. I got out of AR, and what happened, it was like my life had just pressed pause. Like all this insanity that I, when I walked in AR, all this insanity, like I paused when I went in, but when I went out, it was just like somebody pressed play. It was so insane. My girlfriend had stolen my car, of course. So I got no car. That was the last possession I had in the world. That car meant a lot to me. You know, she's out there. She was supposed to get sober. She didn't. She decided not to. I'm in this sober house with like 24 guys. It's like a duplex and a duplex on each side. And I'm really grateful for that experience with the sober house, because I got to see people leave the sober house. And when they left the sober house and they weren't working a program, they came back to the sober house. That's what happened to them. Or they didn't. Or they died. A lot of people died. I mean, just not here right now. Because they had so much time clean, and they decided to go right back out there, and they OD'd. And they're not here right now. So I needed that though, because it became real at that moment. It allowed me to see what I needed to see to stay sober. So I wanted to leave the sober house. I was tired of, I was tired of sleeping with another guy in my room. I started making some money, I wanted to get out of there, and there was one person that was doing the program in the sober house, and I talked to him. I came to him with my concerns. I want to leave. I'm scared because everybody that leaves goes out. What do you think about this? And he's like, well, Max, this is what I suggest you do. And he took me to a CA meeting, and I remember I was so uncomfortable in my own skin. See, here's a metaphor for y'all. Doing drugs and alcohol were like me having my clothes on. I feel comfortable with my clothes on. You take the drugs and the alcohol away from me, I feel like I'm naked. I feel like I'm naked and everybody's looking at me. That's how I felt, and that's how I felt walking through that. But walking through that, I leaned in with my shoulder, and I did it. I was so scared to ask for a sponsor that I had to ask my buddy that took me to the meeting, hey, man, hook me up with a sponsor. Hey, hook me up with a sponsor. I started meeting this said sponsor. And my experience with that, I don't know if y'all know, but every time that you go and you're going to score dope or something like that, or you're going to go do the wrong thing, there's like this feeling in your pit, and deep in your stomach, where you know it's the wrong thing to do. You're doing the wrong thing. In the bottom of your heart, you know that. Well, it was the opposite of that. When I was meeting with my sponsor, it was good. I felt life. I felt like I could breathe again. I don't know what I was doing. I was reading out of the book, but I had no experience with this before. I'd gotten through the first couple of steps, and I got an upper respiratory infection. And this is where I found out how cunning, baffling, and powerful alcohol and drugs are. I got this upper respiratory infection. It was really bad. You go to the doctor, right? You're sick, you go to the doctor. What does the doctor give you? Codeine syrup. So, of course, I drink this codeine syrup, and I become a codeine syrup connoisseur. I all of a sudden know about this codeine syrup, and I'm going to multiple doctors for this codeine syrup. I know exactly what kind they want, I want, and I know everything about it, and I realize I got like 18 ounces in my truck, or a large amount of cough syrup. And I'm like, how in the shit did this happen? Like, really? Like, I was working the steps, like, wait a minute, And there was this, something came to me. It was like, either let's keep doing this Alcoholics Anonymous thing, or let's go back out there for real, because this codeine syrup ain't what I want. It ain't what I want at all. I want to go back to my girlfriend, which, by the way, is calling me. She's so powerful, too, in this moment, because, like, she'll say funny stuff. She'll call, and she'll be like, hey, yeah, I know you ordered two strippers over there. I just need to know the address. Like, just teasing me, like, this whole time. And thank God that I chose to work the program and really do this deal. What it's like now, it's hard to talk about that person because I don't know him anymore. Like, I don't know who that guy is. Like, I'm a completely different guy. That same guy who, didn't see his daughter for 3 or 4 years, I've got custody of her now. She lives with me. Like, she lives with me. Mom's in prison, you know. But I get to be there, you know. I get to be there for her. And that's a direct thing from Alcoholics Anonymous, because I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to show up every day for someone else with a smile on my face. Like, I hate people. I really do. Like, I hate all of y'all. When I'm in drugs and alcohol, and when I'm not living a spiritual life, you know, I get to own a plumbing business. I started real young, and I don't even know how that's possible. I don't know how I know what to charge, to be honest, for these plumbing jobs. When I started, no one guided me. I intuitively knew how to do that. The only thing I can say is a power greater than myself. I feel like I've got clothes on, you know. I'm comfortable. I can get up here and I can talk to y'all, and it's awkward and it's weird, I'll be honest, but I can do it, you know. I can do it. I can do so much. It, like, there's not many boundaries. Like, I know I can't drink and use, but me admitting my powerlessness has given me this powerful life, this really powerful life. Like, I've got a bunch of guys under me, and I've got to tell them what to do. And, you know, I've got to bring the program in that. I've got to work the steps in that business. And that's an amazing thing. Like, I love making money, you know, I really do. And I can do that in a spiritual way, legally. And that was never true. Like, I was always, you know, selling drugs, horrible at it, because, you know, I love the product. But what I'm trying to say is I owe my life to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'll do anything for it. I know I'm a little early, but thank y'all for listening to me, and y'all take care.